Coming up on today's episode, Ford releases an actual electric Mustang, Starship goes through some design changes, and oil goes negative because everything is upside down now. Let's get ludicrous. Hey there, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future stuff happening today, that's going to make tomorrow
totally ludicrous.
There you go. I'm Joe Scott with the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Oh, hi. It's me, Tim Dodd, the Everyday Astronaut from the Starship Weekly Update podcast that we're doing here. And with us is Ben Sullins.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Sullins from the interwebs. And I am dying to hear about all this stuff, Tim. But I think we need to give a thanks to all the folks listening live on Discord right now.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
How are you guys? Yeah,
hello, Discord.
We got a full room down there.
Ooh.
Hey-o.
William, Trevor, Tom, Sean.
You guys stay 6 feet apart.
Yeah, Armand. Yeah. Social distancing. It's a small room. Be careful.
I think we could use some social media distancing.
Yeah, I think
exactly.
Well, people are getting ornery on the internet, I feel like.
Yeah.
More than normal.
I believe it's pronounced horny.
I think
totally
last week we recorded on Horny Day. We were making a joke like, it's just every day, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, do you need a day for this?
Right.
Well, I'm kind of shocked, Ben, that you have
today's
all those dumb sound effects, but you don't have buttumch on your thing.
Mm. Oh.
You need a rim shot.
Dare you?
You need a rim shot and a sad trombone.
No. Oh, no. This is coming, folks. I'm sure I will have regretted this decision.
Ben is now like the sound guy at every radio station that has all the sound effects and movie lines and stuff.
The farts and the horns and the ow-ga type of stuff.
There's some people outside. I think the people outside are protesting right now. Can you hear? It sounds like they're shouting. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. What is it going to be?
Please get back. Do not record.
Why? Why? We might as well change this podcast to like the crazy Terry Fox and Barf McJensen in the morning, you know, like
this is so someone said like, so please don't become Jim Cramer. And I thought, yes, I'm going to become Jim Cramer.
Just get a bunch of buttons to press and scream
and
really
like
long.
A bat and just start hitting stuff for no reason. Stocks are up. Ah!
It's a bad thing. It's a good thing. I'm going to destroy either way.
Turn off that sound effect. What are you doing? Wait, was that?
Are you still on?
Oh, sorry. How about my spaceman? I'm in orbital.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we move on to some of the news that we have to talk about? How about I start? Because
I'm
speaking
just gonna
of
sit back and...
speaking of technology that is exciting, our ludicrous future, your boy Tim here... is going to be trying out some new technology. Da, 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 da. Check this out. So they've been talking a lot about Starlink, and Elon had been talking about how they're going to be doing some beta testing in 3 months and probably some public beta stuff in about 6 months. And I go, hey, Elon, I think I was destined to test Starlink. I live 42 degrees north, and I'm 4.2 miles north of 4242. And oddly, I'm 6.9 kilometers from 4242 also.
What does that have to do with anything? I saw the tweet.
42 is his favorite number. It's the answer to everything.
Oh, okay, got it. I thought there was actually like, oh, the Starlink satellites are, you know, in this orbit or whatever, and at this altitude or this latitude, it'd be better.
Well, currently there's about 420 Starlink satellites as of yesterday.
Right.
Well, they're deorbiting too as we speak, kind of. So there's about 420 Starlink satellites. And yeah, 42 latitude close to 42. Yeah. Anyway, Elon said sure. So maybe I'll get to test it.
That would be cool.
And I'll let you guys know.
So
how it is.
Yeah. So they just launched 16 more satellites, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here was the liftoff just yesterday. Or Wednesday, if you're listening to this on Friday now, which you probably are. So SpaceX launched another successful Starlink mission. This was a massively reused rocket. This was a fourth flight for this rocket and reused fairings. So that's really exciting. Luckily for us, they recovered this one. Remember, they've had the last two prior Starlink missions did not have successful landings. And this one, after the footage kind of whoop, it worked. This one worked. So they're back at it, landing successfully again, which is great. And they successfully deployed the 60 satellites. And the cool thing is, I didn't pull this up, so maybe I'll do a little bit of... why don't you guys ask some questions, and I will pull up some awesome footage that some people showed.
How about, while you do that, we should mention folks that are new to the show, we also have a highlights channel that you can go check out with just these individual news bits instead of the full 18 hours that we typically post. So
since everyone's so short on time these days.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I love when people are like, I just want to, I only want like 10, 20 minutes. It's like, there's a pause button. You can pause this stuff. It's not live TV anymore.
We're so engaging that they can't stop. So.
Yeah. We do that with our movies. Jenny and I were like, well, it'll take us 3 nights to watch them because we only get, you know, 40 minutes of free time with the kids and stuff.
Yeah. But check this out. So Eagle Kepper already immediately took this and posted this picture from Europe, you know, 20 minutes after the launch or whatever, 30 minutes, something like that. Very soon after the launch, this is the second stage at the top, followed by the two trails, because there's 60 in 60 satellites in the fairing, and they're in stacks of 30. So there's two stacks of 30. So that's what we're seeing. And then someone else here, this was Zapolks Nagy, space station guys. Check this image out though. Again, the Falcon 9 second stage, either an empty stack or satellite deployment or something or whatever it is, and then the satellites. How wild is that? Apparently they seem to be a lot more visible right now, and I did ask Elon that because I've been seeing people reporting constantly that they're seeing.
I was going to bring that up. I've been seeing that a lot lately.
Tons. And I think there's three factors for the increase in like people noticing them. Number one, people are probably more bored and spending more time now just like maybe hanging out outside in their backyard, you know, trying new things. That could be part of it. Light pollution's down. Air quality is a lot higher. So people in metropolitan areas have a lot more visible sky than normal. And that's literally measurable, that the night sky is more visible in big cities than it ever has been. But also the main reason is probably because they're currently the satellite solar arrays are currently deployed in a position that is helping them to raise their orbit. And then once they're parked and in their final orbit, I think that satellite array changes how it's facing. And then it won't be nearly as visible. But I think right now, some of the satellites are in their maximum visibility phase. And Elon did mention that in a couple months, I think he said, what did he say? By launch 9, they're going to be a lot more, they're going to try a sunshade on it. And that should help to reduce the brightness and stuff like that. So he said, so right now the solar panel angle during orbit raise and to park, and they're fixing it right now. So currently some of them are a lot more visible than they normally would be. But
I wonder if that messes up any kind of long-term time-lapse type telescope stuff going on.
Absolutely. Well,
that's the concern, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's like, oh, it'll be fine tomorrow, it's like, yeah, but you already jacked up like some of it, and that could throw off the whole thing.
What's bothering me about this newest wave that I've been seeing the last few days along with, you know, UTEM is that, like, most of the time you hear those complaints, like, right after it launches. And, yeah, right after it launches and they're all, like, grouped together, it's going to be a lot shinier and it's not in its regular orbit and everything, probably still deploying and whatnot. But, you know, when they were doing it just in the last few days saying, I'm seeing all these satellites up there, that started to bother me a little bit because it's like those have been up for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah.
But the thing that people need to remember is, and this is where, okay, and maybe I'm just not an astronomer. Astronomy is not as important to me as spaceflight, so maybe I'm a little biased, but...
Astrophysics, you mean?
Well...
like that kind of stuff? Well...
yeah, I mean, yeah. But the thing that, from my previous, you know, I used to do a lot of astrophotography when Everyday Astronaut was a photo series. You know, I went out and would do a lot of night sky stuff. And pre-dawn, you know, or yeah, pre-dawn and post-sunset is really the only time these things are going to be that visible. Because obviously they have to be reflecting off the sun. So if you're truly in darkness, they aren't reflecting off anything and therefore they won't be visible. And you don't do most astronomical things when it's dusk or dawn anyway, you know, you do them in the proper middle of the night. So I feel like people are cherry picking in both sides. Like I'm guilty of like, it's not a big deal. But at the same time, like people are stacking images, doing like 7 minute long things and stacking only the positive results of the satellites and just saying, look how nasty it is. And it's like, that's not what it would look like. You know, you're cherry picking the data. The astronomers can do the opposite where you remove all of the stuff like that. And they're instead adding it in post-processing to make it so it is stacked positives, you know. So it's, there's things that they can do and people are like, well, yeah, but it's just extra noise. Well, there's always noise. There's literally, like, sometimes they have to take into consideration certain things and remove the noise from the data. So they're already used to it. There's things you can do to offset that, but...
Just atmospheric, what's the word I'm looking for?
Atmospheric distortion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is a huge thing. I just think we're maybe at this awkward moment in history where this is going online before we had... more on-orbit you know, observatories. Like, I think once there's more and more astronomy already just in orbit or out in space, you know, like the James Webb Space Telescope, and, you know, if say, Starship or other commercial launchers make it cheap enough to be able to do big, game-changing, you know, space-based observations, like, that'll be kind of game over
anyway.
Yeah,
that'll be way
better. But it'll take... Think about the number of, you know, of... observatories and things, and
you know,
and
plus
units down here, it'd be a decade before, or 2 decades before we could remotely match that output or that capability. But
yeah, you're not wrong either that it's Elon, so people want to pick on him for stuff because it will get themselves more attention, right?
But also, it's Elon, and he's going to make sure he's saying it's okay, even if it's
well,
maybe
I mean,
not
like
100% okay too.
I mean, like, if this were some random, you know, Russian oligarch or billionaire out there doing this, those
people
may be complaining, but no one would care.
Yeah. Or in the other constellations that were in the works, you know, like no one, I never heard one concern about like OneWeb or any of the other ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But still, it is something to, you know, and it sounds like Elon cares about it, obviously. It's
they're taking
and the stars and stuff.
They're taking actions. And I think, yeah, as long as they're working with the scientists, which they are, they should be able to come up with protocols and ways to make it so it's really a mitigated issue. It was funny, someone the other on Twitter goes, I would give up internet before I gave up astronomy or something. And I was like, how ironic for you to say that on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, maybe sign of you next to your telescope or something. I don't know.
I had a similar thing. I posted that video, Who Killed Teslanomics, you know, explaining, because I guess I explained it here why I changed the channel name, but, you know, not everyone from the channel watches the podcast. So I did that video and I got a few people saying, oh, this clickbait, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you realize you're on YouTube, right? Like, this is the home of clickbait. It's like going to a steakhouse and complaining they don't have a quinoa salad. It's like, you went to a steakhouse, idiot. Like, if you don't want clickbait, go read scholarly journals.
Right.
Don't go on the internet.
Right.
Because guess what? That's where that's the home of it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's but the game.
I got a fun one there, Tim. So speaking of removing the noise, Ford is removing the noise.
Ooh, now that's a segue.
From
that is
a Mustang that is electric and is an actual Mustang. How cool is that?
But that looks like a drag car. Are they selling a drag car version of their Mustang? Or is this not a production version?
Yeah. Okay, so the Mustang Mach-E that came out, what, late last year? I forget. Time, we're in the upside down.
It was right around the Cybertruck.
Last century, when the Mustang Mach-E came out. a lot of people, Ford fans, Mustang fans, really up in arms because it was an SUV, not a sports coupe. It wasn't a sports car, and that's what Mustang is. And so they finally now have unveiled the Mustang. Let me get the name right for you guys, because it's another spectacular use of that. Mustang Jet, they call this? There has to be more.
Cobra Jet.
Cobra Jet,
it says in
yeah.
the back there.
Where's my thing at? I had a whole list of stuff to say. But so the official announcement was Ford Performance. So that's like the performance division. You know, they make like the GT and stuff. Introduces an all-electric Mustang Cobra Jet 1400. Mustang Cobra Jet 1400. That's the name. Okay. This is a fully electric dragster prototype. So it's not quite a real car, but they are going to have an unveiling later this year, reportedly.
Didn't they just unveil it?
To see probably a real version of this. Like, this is a dragster.
Oh, it's just a render. Yes. Okay.
The quarter mile time, I don't think they listed the 0 to 60. So it'll top out at 170 miles per hour with a low 8-second quarter mile time, which is absolutely bonkers.
Wow.
I don't even know what other cars get low 8 seconds. Like I think a Tesla Model S P100D is like 10.5 or something.
Yeah, it's in the tens.
Even a Roadster, the new Roadster, I think was reported around like just under 9. So
under 9 or low 9s, because under 9 would be insane.
Like, I don't remember exactly.
Full blown drag cars, you know. I mean, we're talking about people, you know, that have supercharged, you know, 1500 horsepower, slicks in the back, stripped interior, full-blown drag cars, you know, like.
Well, and that's basically what this is, right? When you look at it. So they do report 1400 horsepower and over 1100 foot-pounds of instant torque, they say. Wow. So this is a drag car prototype, but the cool thing about it is that when they have an unveiling, I would speculate that they will also unveil a real electric Mustang, you know, like a production car version of this.
That'd be cool.
I thought that was just kind of neat because, you know, I love seeing new companies get into the electric car game. Ford obviously has a big legacy here. And they, I don't feel they have as much blood on their hands with killing the EV1 back in the day as GM does, although they were all in on it. So they all definitely lobbied the CARB to remove the mandate or whatever. But whatever, I'm happy that they're here and they're coming in. And finally, this is the thing that they should have unveiled instead of the Mach-E. Honestly, it should have been this one. Holy crap, let's go for a ride in this. That would make big headlines, and everyone would love that. And then, hey, by the way, we have the consumer version of this, like just a regular Mustang. And then, by the way, we now have a family version, the SUV thing, the Mach-E, later. I think they kind of went backwards. They started with like the boring version of it and then went to the super sexy version. But I like that they're bringing it. I like that they're bringing the heat here.
Yeah.
I wonder if, because what you're talking about is basically the Tesla model. Start with the big flashy thing that gets everybody's attention and then work your way down.
Yeah.
Maybe they were thinking, well, somebody else has already done the flashy thing to highlight electric cars, so let's just kind of get in there at the ground level because they've already done the work for us or something.
That's exactly what they think. And I know that because I asked them that exact question. And they were, so a very interesting thing in talking to the folks at Ford is they're all, you know, and obviously this is like, we'll, like, you can talk it up all you want, but I want to see 500,000 electric cars from Ford on the road before I say, okay, I believe you. But when talking to them, they're all hyped on this. They're all in. They're all pushing the electric stuff. And they were very thankful, and they actually really, really like Tesla because of what they have done. They've made electric cars okay. You know, to where, I can drive an electric car and it doesn't feel like, a propeller head, you know, hit tree hugger or something. So that was the Mach-E was why they felt they could do that in talking to him. So you're exactly right.
I've always said that I feel like the whole industry went backwards with hybrid and or electric motors because, first off, taking something like a Prius, right, where the competitor might be the Matrix or what, I don't remember what other like small normal internal combustion car that Toyo would have made at the time, something that gets, we'll say, 38 miles to the gallon or 35 or whatever, And then making it get, you know, 45, you're only getting a 25% increase or whatever, you know, whatever, and make up numbers here. And not increasing the performance or anything. You're just eking out a little bit better gas mileage, as opposed to like a truck, where a truck could have got increased performance because it could have had a torque multiplier. But as a side benefit of this torque multiplier, all of a sudden you also end up getting, instead of, you know, 16 miles per gallon in the city, you're getting 30 in the city. You're doubling. Like, why didn't we start there? So people thought it was cool and people thought it was a good idea. Like, oh yeah, my truck's got the torque multiplier, but I'm not even having to get as much gas these days. I'm sorry that I went with that accent. When
torque multiplier.
Sunday.
See the torque multiplier run over 14 school buses.
No, you're right. I think there have been some of those folks that have said that, basically, that we electrified the wrong end of the fleet.
Absolutely. Yes.
We've talked about this before, but like when you get a really tiny footprint of a car, you can't put enough batteries in it, even with the highest energy dense ones we have available today. So they suck because they don't go very far. Mm. But if you had an SUV, yeah. Hell yeah. Like an electric motor has so much torque that the weight doesn't really matter a ton.
Yeah,
and you have such a bigger room. You can dump this is like GM was talking about. We're going to have I don't know. Not going to make any of them batteries. I forget what it was. It wasn't titanium. It was a not real EM battery. And they were going to like
titanium.
Unobtainium. Yeah, they were gonna punch in 200 kilowatt hours and beat Tesla. You're like, you have 200 kilowatt hours in there. Of course you're gonna go further, right? Like that's like,
I would hope so.
My car with a 85 gallon gas tank goes further than yours with a 10 gallon gas tank. Like it better.
I replaced my truck bed with just a fuel tank, and guess what? I have better range.
Yeah. But you're right. I think the point you're trying to make is that like it was kind of dumb to go after that part of the fleet, and then also it didn't really make much of a difference. It's like it wasn't much of a step forward.
Right, as opposed to it would have made a drastic impact on the cars that are getting the worst, especially in city. These big heavy trucks, SUVs, were in town. They're constant stop and go. You're having to, accelerate all that mass constantly. That's where a hybrid system would have made the biggest difference. Like, what were we doing? Why did we start on the other end of the scale where it makes little difference?
And I think to a good step forward, and this is somewhat controversial in the EV space, is a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. Because it is an electric vehicle, and typically they go for, I don't know, 30 to 50 miles on just batteries. And that's awesome because a lot of people, that's their commute to work and back. They get to work, they plug it in, they drive home. Like I have friends, they bought a Chevy Volt with a V, and they reported, I used to go get gas every other week. Now I go twice a year. And you're like, that's fantastic. That is a huge step forward, even though you're not going full battery electric vehicle. So I think that would have been, I think you're totally right. Hybrids were kind of a, what is this, other than marketing spin? And then actual plug-in hybrids, battery ones, are a step forward. And that's what you see, like Jeep is coming out, I think they said in 2022 or, in 50 years or so, all of their fleet will be plug-in hybrids or there'll be a plug-in hybrid option.
Well, not that it matters because right now they're going to be paying you to take gas, apparently. Here, take some of this gas. Fill your car, please. We have too much of it. What is going on there? Is anyone paying attention to the whole
Joe, tell us what's going on.
Oil price?
I don't know that I know more than you guys do, but I've got an article I can put up on the screen to make it look like I've read it.
Do that.
Let's just be honest here. So it's already gone back up. So this isn't true anymore. We kind of covered that before we started recording. But this last week, oil prices actually went negative, which means that they are they're producing more than they can sell, and they have to pay people to store it. I've seen some stuff just around about this, so I'm going to sort of repeat them, and if they're wrong, then let's blame them. But So just before all this happened, we were already kind of having a bit of an oil issue because Iran and I believe Argentina, Russia, Saudi Arabia. I'm just going to throw out country names now. But there was a kind of a pricing war going on, and it was sort of pricing us out of the market here in the United States. And then you know, everybody stopped driving.
Yeah.
And going to work and stuff. And so everything just completely fell apart. But yeah, so it dipped down below right here. It says oil prices crashed through zero, closing out the day at -$37 a barrel.
On 420.
On 420, yeah. So I don't remember. When was the last time this happened? It was like back in the 30s or something.
Wow. Has it ever? Yeah, so.
Or since they started tracking it back in the 30s.
What's interesting about this to me is I feel like, you know, typically you'd hear when high gas prices, you're looking at like $100 a barrel. And now you're at a negative dollars a barrel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was exactly what you said. I think it was just the confluence of the OPEC changes. Because it's funny how that whole thing works. I don't know if you guys have researched it much. I'm vaguely familiar. But you have a cartel, like the actual definition of the word cartel, called OPEC. And they all get together and agree what to do. Because if one person produces more and than there should be, then it throws off the entire oil market worldwide. And Russia, I don't believe, is in OPEC. So it's usually like Russia and OPEC basically decide what's going on. But here in the U.S., ever since, man, when was it? We had like a huge oil shortage. Probably for the past 60, 70 years, we've been investing heavily in our own oil production in the U.S. And so we actually make more than we use. We're a net exporter. And so when you look at all that, it's like, yeah, if somebody's not, like, all these pieces have to fit together right, otherwise this is what happens. And then tack on, mm-hmm. nobody's driving anywhere, and you're just like, you know, the mm-hmm. whole industry falls apart real quick.
Well, it says right here at the end of this article, it says, these staggering figures may not be as large in May and beyond, but there's little chance the global demand will bounce back to $100 a gallon anytime soon, or barrel, sorry, if ever.
Mm. Yeah, $100 a barrel is always kind of the marker of, like, whoa, that's getting high. Like, the oil market's running hot. And then OPEC and those guys could say, hey, let's produce more, you know?
Yeah. Well, here, real quick, let me share my screen, because there's one of my, you know, most trusted sources, thestonkmarket.com. Elementary school forced to take possession of 10 million barrels of oil. this is just satire.
It's like The Onion.
Yeah, it's really funny. Tom shared it in Discord, and it made me laugh really hard. But that's pretty funny. I wonder what impact this will have, though, on people wanting to purchase an EV, because obviously low gas prices make people, consumers, a little more prone to not worrying about which vehicle they get next, you know, big SUVs type of stuff. But at the same time, like, I wonder if this is, at the same time, we're also seeing people experiencing, you know, a lot of the environmental impacts that we're seeing, where people, the air is cleaner than ever before, all that type of stuff. It's interesting. I wonder, I don't know. What do you guys think?
So there's a group of guys that I meet with on Zoom, been doing it long before Zoom was really popular, on Wednesday nights. And one of them works as an architect, or he works in an architecture firm. And he has been working from home during this thing. And he was saying last night, he was like, I don't know that I'm going to go back to work in the office anytime soon, you know? And just because what I think has happened is like, a lot of companies could have done work from home kind of things for a long time, but it was always like, I'm just trying to get business done for the day. That's like this side thing that I don't need to worry about. And it's something I don't have time for that,
change,
you know, as a manager or whatever.
Right.
And then they were forced to implement these resources to make it so that people could work from home. And I think we're going to see a lot of people saying, you know what, I'm more efficient this way. It's less time stuck in traffic. A lot of this is going to continue afterwards, I think. Like a lot mm-hmm. of companies that were putting off doing some kind of work from home functionality have now implemented it. And a lot of them aren't going to completely go back. So, I keep saying this. I'm always thinking about, like, what is happening right now and how it's going to permanently, you know, carry on beyond this. And that's one of those things. And I think the price of oil is going to stay pretty low for a while.
I think that's a good thing. There was an interesting study done in China about this, where they took, I think it was 500 people. They asked 1,000 employees who wanted to work from home. This is in China, at something called C-Trip, which is China's version of Expedia. They asked 1,000 people if they would want to work from home, and 500 of them volunteered. And a lot of them had really long commutes. And what they found was that those people were more productive in the short term. And then when asked to come back, a lot of them decided to still come back because they missed the human connection with the other people.
Social interaction. Yeah.
So there's lots of studies and stuff in this space about how it affects people. But like in the short term, productivity goes up, people are happy. But in the long term, it's a negative thing. So it sounds like just like your sit-stand desk, like there needs to be some kind of balance of like once a month company lunches, it's the minimum, or something
or come in
like that.
Once a week.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Come in, and it'd be how great would it be? This might be getting into like communism or something, but how great would it be if there was some kind of system in place where it encouraged, hey, these companies around, you know, this, you guys do a meeting on Monday, you guys do meetings on Tuesday in these regions or whatever. Or so that people aren't all flocking, like the 9-to-5 idea where like everyone goes to work at the same time and leaves at the same time. What if we started spreading that out and, you know, like making it so.
What if we flatten the curve?
What if we flatten
of
the
commuting?
Curve? Seriously. Yeah. I don't know. I wonder how big of a ripple effect this will have, because we were talking last week or 2 weeks ago about, you know, offices and everything, where if all of a sudden office spaces are half as big because people aren't working in the office as much, or, you know, they're electively coming in every other week or whatever type of thing, you know, what will happen to the economy there? And will that shift where all of a sudden some of these big, huge mega corporations will need to just go down to the size smaller, and, you know, cause they're not needing this giant one anymore. And
yeah, there will be other effects too, like, you know, restaurants nearby, coffee shops nearby, you know, they who live on, those companies, you know, like in downtown San Diego, in the area I used to have an office, it was called the Central Business District. Basically, after like 2 or 3 o'clock, all the places shut down. Like, that's it. Cause they're like, yep, lunch rush is over. We're gone. We're going home.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's the whole ecosystem, the like economic ecosystem that exists today is built around this model. And now that model is shattered. But yeah, what's going to happen? You know, how many of the pieces are going to come back to what they were?
Yeah.
Maybe some balance. I had a team when I had my team here in San Diego for Pluralsight. I kind of had a do whatever you want policy in terms of coming into the office, but come in for team lunch, which was every Tuesday. So we would cater in lunch, and then we would just, you know, kind of chew the fat, you know, tell stories, whatever. I would give like an update what's going on. And that was it. That's all I cared about. Other than that, you can work from home 100% if you want. I really don't care. Because we have people that had this one guy, he had a commute. If he came in rush hour, it would be like an hour and a half to an hour 45 to get into the office. And I'm like, this is just stupid.
Right.
This is a complete waste of everyone's time.
You were talking about, Joe, with the people, you know, missing the socialization. Maybe it'll just shift where people socialize more locally with their neighbors and with their friends as opposed to their coworkers, you know, because now you're not commuting 2 hours a day. You have more time to do just socialization. I don't know.
It's funny you say that, because that was something else that we talked about last night with those friends of mine, was that, you know, they walk around the neighborhood and people are just like hanging out in their front yards, neighbors coming over 6 feet apart. You know, but like they're just bringing their little lawn chairs and sitting out there and hanging out. And
socially responsible.
I'd never seen that before. I lived here for 10 years. I've never seen that before.
Huh.
You know,
that's cool. I haven't even really like hung out with my friends at all. That might be a good idea. Like do like a big giant circle in someone's front lawn where you're all far apart.
Yeah.
In a cornfield.
Not to go. I know we're kind of on a different topic now, but going back to the whole oil price thing, I said oil. Very, very Texan.
Y'all Dev.
Ole. You ever been to the Ole Ball? But so giving a little bit of credit where I saw this was 2-Bit Da Vinci did a video about this that I saw yesterday or this morning, whatever. But I don't know exactly how oil pumps work, but apparently you can't just turn them on and off, mm-hmm. because once you turn it off, like, things get unsettled, yeah. and you can't. Yeah. So when you're having these moments like this where they don't have any place to store it and the consumption mm-hmm. has gone down, it kind of builds on top of itself because they can't just turn off the oil Whoa. Wells. They have to let them keep going or else it actually causes more problems.
Well, and this is the OPEC thing, right? So when they agree to, like, increase production, what they're saying is take the ginormous reserves we have and sell more of it. Yeah. So it's a scarce resource, but it's like a falsely scarce resource, like diamonds or something, where right. diamond dealers buy all the diamonds so that way there are fewer of them, that way the prices go up, right? And yeah. and so it's that same kind of thing, and this one is exactly what you said, because you can't just, you know, hit the off button or, you know, have a Nest yeah. thermostat be like, yeah, turn all those off, well, I'm not using them, doesn't work.
Well, and so I just got to mention the flip side of all this as well, being in Texas. So oil in Texas is basically like coal in West Virginia, you know, like everybody knows somebody that works in the oil industry around here, mm-hmm. Especially the part of Texas that I come from. And so I'm seeing a lot of posts on Facebook from people that are like, you know, pray for the oil industry. And you're sitting there going, what? but that's because they're worried about losing their jobs, right, you know, course. And not being able to provide for their families. Of course, nobody wants to lose their jobs or anything.
Well, and
so
how long until there's a bailout for the oil industry?
Well, yeah.
Inevitably,
but you know. I'm seeing an interesting parallel between what we've kind of been hearing from coal country to what we're now starting to see in oil country. It's starting to mirror that a little bit.
Man, it's almost like we should have.
And of course, I feel for people who are worried about losing their incomes and not being able to pay their rents and their family, you know, meals and everything.
But this is where I do not understand why there's people like they'll act. I mean, I know why, but when people try to actively, you know, get rid or like deny solar and wind farms, you know, saying like they're evil and all, like, and all this misinformation, it's like those are job potentials, guys.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
there's a huge,
I think solar is the biggest energy sector employer, I believe.
It's crazy, and it's mm-hmm. just growing, so why fight that? This is that whole thing, I've said this about a lot of things before, but it's like if you are still betting and reinvesting right now in clearly antiquated technologies like coal and oil, you deserve to lose your money because you can clearly see the trends. Like, obviously, we can see what's happening here and what's happening mm-hmm. here. And, like, why are you still – you deserve to lose your money. Yes, I agree, like, 30, 40 years ago, you know, if you invested $4 trillion or something and you're like, oh, it was a 50-year payoff. I got – you know, yeah. There's going to be a lot of money. Just going to hang in there for 10 minutes. You know, I get that. But if you're today still being like, well, I got to get a new oil rig up here. Like,
tons.
Why?
And there's still tons of that stuff going on, man. It's ridiculous that these companies aren't shifting. As I guess, you know, it's such a nuanced conversation, right? There's so
really
much
is.
To consider. Like, yeah. it's easy for us to sit here and say this, but we don't know, you know, all that stuff, all the pieces, that things that have set in motion 10 years ago
right.
that are, you can't stop now kind of a thing. Like,
yeah. yeah. Well, so you can make a parallel to, like, what happened with Kodak. They said, we're a film company.
Yeah.
Not, we're an image company or a camera company.
Right.
We're a film company.
Right.
And then when everything started to shift, they were like, oh, no, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing. Nobody's stopping Shell or Exxon from saying we're an energy company. So let's also make some windmills. Let's also get into solar, you know?
They are.
Oh, are they?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. 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 See, yeah. That's
I am
the thing.
I'm talking out my butt.
Well, yeah. it to what degree is the deal? Because BP and these guys I know are doing huge amounts, but then you look at it, it's almost like Volkswagen with Electrify America. You're like, that exists because of Dieselgate. You were not going to do that. That was not, you know, and like BP is doing all the stuff. Yeah. Remember the Deepwater Horizon thing or whatever? Yeah. There's a reason you're doing it, right?
Yeah,
so you have
yeah.
to wonder where, but I don't care. Like, I know some people really get into the motivation behind why.
Right.
I don't care. As long as you're doing it, let's party. Right.
Even people are doing the right thing for the wrong reasons, they're still doing the right thing.
That's, I mean, yeah, like yeah. China's a very good example because they're the largest EV market in the world. They're pushing EVs incredibly hard. They're pushing renewables incredibly hard. They have all kinds of really fascinating tech, all these things going. But that's not to say that the human rights record of China is also good. Right. Like, clearly, right. China has some things that I think we can all objectively look at and go, ah, that's not good, you know? Right. But to me, I don't know, maybe I'm just like an eternal optimist of like, I always want to find the good in someone or something. And well, so, and you know, I'm for it regardless of how or why it happens.
Well, and the same thing happens with us with politics, obviously, where people will, like, something, someone of an opposing party will do something that is clearly right. And then people will be like, yeah, but they, I don't think I like this because they also did X, Y, and Z in the same type of manner. It's like, no, guys, you should be applauding them when they do something you like. That's that's how we get out of this stupid, like, totally black and white syndrome that we're in right now, where everything, like, the president, if someone's, you know, opposed to the president of the United States, they might say, you know, like, well, I mean, it's about time he did that, but...
Yeah.
It's like, no, guys, applaud when something is done that is a good idea, like... I hate that we're so...
The one that stuck out to me was the medical charges. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but he signed something that forced all healthcare providers to release what's called a charge master publicly. This is how much, like, if you get your blood drawn, how much does it actually cost them versus how much do they bill the insurance companies? Oh. And this is basically, you could, talking from... lots of conversations I've had with a good friend that's an expert in this field, you can point to like why healthcare in this country is so expensive to the charge master. This whole thing that was created back in the 70s, it's ridiculous. And it's all been completely secret and private. And then Trump signed a thing. It's like, nope, not anymore. And you're like, oh, you may disagree with him, but hell yeah. Like, yeah, I want to see that data because that's going to make a positive impact on people. So yeah, I agree with you. Like, I always try to find the good in people and things. So.
Well, I hope this podcast helps us, or at least reminds ourselves to not always be so polarized on the sides, but really just focus on an issue and say, oh, good, like we're making progress in this or we're not, you know? And yeah, because I don't know, we're in this weird, our country is, the world, I feel like, is so extra divided, and I don't think social media is helping that.
Well, speaking of
sometimes
making progress.
Sometimes I feel like, go ahead.
No, I want to hear your thoughts, Joe. Give it to me.
I was about to go down a super depressing rabbit hole.
Of course.
No, the way you were talking about how divided we are right now and the internet, I started to say that sometimes I feel like the internet is the great filter.
Yeah.
When you talk about the great filter for Fermi paradox and whatnot. It's been this wonderful thing. Clearly, I make my living on the internet. So do you guys.
Most
but
of us do,
it's also
probably.
Been this horrible source of misinformation and polarization and algorithms that highlight
racism,
sensationalism, and negativity over, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
About when quarantined.
That's the question. Like, was the internet a good idea?
sometimes I wonder.
I would love if we could all agree upon some way to do like a fact-checking thing that's just like automatically installed in web browsers or something that like, I don't know, some way to, I don't know how you do that, but something.
We're still so early in this whole thing. I mean, 100 years from now, do you think the internet's going to be...
the wild, wild west?
Anything like it is right now?
Of course not.
I mean, I'm asking, I don't know. But
No way. Yeah, I don't know.
Check back with me in 100 years.
We'll do.
Oh, speaking of 100 years, Ben, what were you showing us?
I got something
speaking
for you
Speaking of
guys.
Checking.
All right, checking. Let's check our news feed. Oh, my gosh. What is going on? Tesla is now claiming 3X improved thermal endurance in the Model S and X performance update.
When was this?
Yeah, so... Tesla just put out a new acceleration boost for the Model S performance, getting the 0 to 60 from 2.4 to 2.3.
That's
have a party, guys. Let's.
That's insane.
And one of the deals was that apparently it's going to improve a 3X improvement in the thermal endurance, meaning you can kind of do more launches consistently and get better speeds. So the release says that with our latest over-the-air software update to Model S performance, we improved 0 to 60 acceleration to 2.3 seconds and quarter mile time to 10.4. So there you go. Going back to that.
There you go. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So Go for more back-to-back runs with improved thermal endurance and activated launch mode with a press of the pedals, which, hallelujah, because launch mode previously was like, solving a Rubik's Cube. Now they have this thing called Cheetah Stance where it lowers the front axle and adjusts damping before entry and better traction. So you can actually go see this. And my buddy Brooks from Drag Times did a video showing it off. It's really cool. And you automatically receive the update, et cetera, based on that. And I saw Marquez got it. So Wow. Cool. You know, updates are going out, faster stuff. The thermal performance is the kind of cool one, though, because that's been sort of a big weak spot, I guess, in the Model S performance specifically. If you guys remember to the very early Model S's, they were putting on the track and they would overheat. Break the seals because it wasn't made to go that like super fast, super like, you know, on a racetrack, you're going hard acceleration, hard braking, hard acceleration, hard braking, just like nonstop, which is why I don't like it. But that the car wasn't made for that. Now apparently it's getting better and all kinds of good things coming to people that can afford a $120,000 car. As good things awesome, should though. Come to them.
But I mean, when's the last time a $500,000 supercar that you drive, you know, five times a year, when's the last time it got a 0.1 second faster over the air, you know, for free?
Never. Yeah, I was going to say you could go get it tuned or something. But
Yep, that's crazy. Dang. Well, should we take a little break here, guys?
Let's do it.
I'm out of coffee.
I'm out of coffee, too. It's time.
Hey, everybody. We wanted to take a second to thank all of our fans out there who are supporting this channel and our individual channels. We wouldn't be anything without you. Everyday Astronaut, Teslanomics, Answers with Joe. Thank you.
I mean, yeah. Honestly, it's this community of people. It's your comments, your likes, your shares, your subscriptions. I mean, we really wouldn't be doing any of this without you.
And we really love when you guys join the conversation. Why Don't They Just is super fun each week where you submit your questions for us to try to answer as best we typically can. Let you know how to join the conversation via Patreon.
Yeah. If you are a Patreon member, you can join our exclusive Discord channel. You can also get early access to episodes, a lot of just other little small perks. But most importantly is our tight-knit community on Discord, because there's a lot of like-minded people that you can chat with live in real time. And it's just a lot of fun to see the community come together each week and listen to our recordings as we record it. That's my favorite part.
Yeah. And so anyway, if you want to join, you can go to olfpod.com/Patreon. We would love to see you there. Thanks again.
And now back to our ludicrous programming.
So we do have a Why Don't They Just.
Ooh, did somebody say Why Don't They Just? Because we have a song for that.
Why don't they just do this? Why don't they just do that? Why don't they just do this? Why don't they just do that?
Isn't that like the greatest thing? Oh, isn't that the greatest thing that's ever happened? That's from Sean Michael Wallace. Sent us this. A new song that's infinitely better than the stupid one that I wrote.
I didn't think we could improve on that one, but apparently you can.
It is possible to improve on perfection, I guess. Hmm. Who knew? But we met Sean at Fully Charged Live, and Sean, thanks for sending this our way. That was awesome. That's incredible. That is incredible. So
that was really cool.
Yeah. So what is our Why Don't They Just this week?
What I really don't understand is how he sang so many notes at the same time. That's
some of us are more talented than others.
That's some throat singing stuff right there.
Yeah, he's using his armpits to harmonize. I don't know.
Yes, we do have one. Let me share my screen. It takes me forever because I'm slow and old. Okay. So, M.O. Crockett's, or M.O.C. Rockets, said, why don't they just have Tesla produce electric mowers and other powered landscaping tools like leaf blowers? I've read, and Tim, you've talked about this, that they pollute in total more than cars, and if Tesla is concerned for the planet, it makes sense. And probably a car is just a status symbol beyond functionality. So that steps on a lot of territory there, but I thought, Tim, maybe you could kind of go with it, because I know you've talked about the two-stroke engine is the problem?
Yeah. I feel like we've kind of talked about this once, maybe a year ago or something. But I think, like, why does Tesla need to do that? There's tons of other companies that, you know, are already in the lawn mowing and that are already working on green, you know, or like electric
things.
I mean,
these exist. It's not that they don't.
Right. Yeah, like these already exist. And not only that, a lot of them are using Tesla batteries. They're using the cells in them for the packs. I mean, it's a pretty common battery. I just don't think that's at all within the scope of what Tesla's trying to do. It's not wrong.
They don't have to do everything battery.
They don't, yeah. It's not wrong that the that two-stroke emissions are very bad, and we should definitely be working on moving on from them. Luckily, electrification of most two-stroke things is... it's a pretty viable and potentially a really good solution. You know, like there's a lot of, I think, now that we're getting increased capacities and things like that, battery swapping, stuff like that. So, you know, you could go do a leaf blower. Sometimes they only last, say, 30 minutes. You might need to do an hour and a half if you're a, you know, company or whatever. But you could have a charging bank and swap them out, no big deal, and it can be a pretty slick solution. So, yeah, it's happening.
Have you seen an electric leaf blower?
Yeah.
You have?
Oh, yeah.
Is it okay? Here's my question, because I see the guys with the leaf blowers and they've got the little backpack with the I guess that's where the motor is and everything. Does an electric leaf blower have like a battery backpack that you carry around?
No. I personally haven't seen those. Are like the industrial grade ones, you know, like that's like you are walking around all day with a leaf blower and they offset a lot of the weight, you know, by putting it on your back, and they last long and blah 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 and are powerful. I haven't necessarily seen a version of that myself yet. But for sure, consumer level ones, you know, like the ones that you normally just hold in your hand. I've seen many of those for sure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a Ryobi one, and it's amazing, by the way, because sweeping, that's who would ever do that again? I can just take this thing. Yeah, it's super light, portable, big battery, whatever. There's a guy, his channel's named is a Homemade Modern. I don't know his name, actually. His name might even be Ben.
His name's Home.
Home
middle name
and his if you look at a lot of his videos, he's very DIY, build this, do that kind of a thing. All of his stuff is battery powered, like circular saws and everything. Like he has a video where he took his truck, he has like a Toyota Tacoma or something, and he like outfitted it with like battery charging banks and all kinds of crazy stuff, and it's all that. So yeah, I mean, this exists. I don't know if that's the question. The question is, why doesn't Tesla do it? Is that the question?
Yeah, basically. He's specifically talking about Tesla. I'm saying he. I'm assuming it's he.
I think, it's curious. I mean, probably the harder thing to do is cars, I would guess, is why they're doing it. Elon seems to really have an affinity for doing the hardest thing. and so maybe that's why it makes more sense. Because... yeah, the little lithium ion batteries that are in, you know, all the leaf blowers and stuff, it's already there. These companies already have it. It already exists. I think, you know, and they're getting better and cheaper is really the bit of it. So,
well, the piece of it that I thought was interesting was the kind of assertion at the end there that the car is a status symbol. I guess this could be taken in multiple ways. Maybe he's saying that Tesla is only interested in doing things that are sexy and cool, that are status symbols, or maybe it's talking about how if you're getting more pollution from those two-stroke engines, then why wouldn't you focus on that if your purpose is really to be environmentally friendly? I think the thing that stuck out to me about that is that a lot of times I think all of us that are really into electric cars, we get kind of myopic about the fact that that's only one tiny piece of the entire climate puzzle that we've got to solve here. And I've argued in the past, and there's arguments against this, but my argument was that the reason why electric cars are important is because they're out there in the streets, in front of people, making that use case and getting, you know, building excitement around electrification.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that they are the solution. They're just part of the solution.
I think what you're touching on is that people aren't completely rational. And right. So, like, the argument of it being a status symbol is a totally valid one. Like, there's nothing wrong with building it because it's a status symbol, because that is something people desire. So if the argument is, why aren't people machines? That's like a completely different discussion, right? But like, why are I mean, if you're a more attractive male or female in general, why is life generally easier for you? Well, because we're human, and that's what we are, right? Mm-hmm. Like in our evolution, we've been programmed to like sweet things when we eat them and things like that. So,
he's tall. He must be really smart.
Right. Yeah, there's all these implicit biases that just come from the nature side of being an animal, and I think it's not something you could ever, like, if you're smart about product development and product design, it's not something that you ignore. Because clearly companies that care about design and aesthetics, like Tesla, like Apple, do well. And it's, I don't think there's any nefarious kind of intent at all. I think it's just being smart, really. You know, why make something sexy? Because people like sexy things. And if you want to have a company that succeeds, you have to make things people like.
It's the halo car effect, you know. It's why, you know, getting something out there that people dream about, that people get excited about. People don't get excited about a leaf blower, I'm afraid to say. Like, no one's like, no 14-year-old kid out there is going, oh my gosh, I'm going to work really hard and go to college and really work my butt off and maybe get a good, I'm going to become a software engineer and I'm going to work at Tesla so I can buy a leaf blower. You know, like,
that cheerleader's going to be really into me if I have that leaf blower.
Yes, that's just not the reality. The reality is, like, people want the sexy thing, like you're talking about, and seeing that's driven around and outperforming and out technologying and driving themselvesing puts a brand of sexiness on electrification. So I think the overall greater good is electric cars being cool, desirable, therefore electric things are cool and desirable, therefore solar panels are cool and desirable, therefore wind power is cool and desirable. It's just kind of the whole.
This is why pure economics doesn't ever work. Like, the pure view of economics, one of the key fundamental principles is that humans and markets and everything act rationally. And that's why all those economic theories fail. And this is where the invention or creation of what they call behavioral economics comes from. Mm-hmm. Because you have to take into account the human factor of it, right? And so, so why don't they? Yeah, because it'd be a dumb move, I guess.
Have you ever listened to the podcast You Are Not So Smart?
Mm-mm.
It's worth listening to. It's all about behavioral science. How everything that you just said, Ben, about how we're not rational people, we're emotional creatures that are trying to fit that into a rationality and everything, and all the ways that your brain deceives you and all the ways that you think you know something but you really don't, and it's a fantastic podcast.
This is clickbait, right? This is people, why what we describe as clickbait headlines or something, why do people do them? It's because they work, right? Why do they work? Because we're human. And that's just how it is. Mm-hmm. So you either use that information to your benefit or you fail, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
But thanks, MOC Rockets, for asking that question.
Yeah, it's a valid question. Speaking of things failing, hopefully we're not going to see something fail. And that is, of course,
please don't fail.
This morning, as we're recording this on Thursday, Lab Padre has the live stream footage, and they posted this compilation time lapse of Serial number 4 Starship rolling out to the pad to be tested. This is very, very exciting. And of course, we owe the people down in Boca Chica so much thanks for always covering this stuff so well. And Lab Padre for the awesome live stream coverage they're able to produce. It's just amazing. But yeah. Check that out. They're rolling. They're getting more. Like, look at how detailed and nuanced the rocket is. I mean, there just seems to be so much more, you know, bits on these than they used to. It just it's looking more and more like a rocket each time it rolls out to the pad. You know, look at all the different COPVs.
I don't know. I still think I could get some corn out of that thing.
Yes, it does in many ways still just look like a giant silo.
I know, I'm looking at this
silo.
Like, huh.
The Gaineses are going to make a mall out of that thing.
Yes. Yes,
I can't wait for the people to be scratching their head that have no idea what you're just talking about.
They'll figure it out.
You have to join us on Patreon and you'll understand that joke.
But the cool thing is, let's see, where did that go? I don't know. But Elon basically said that serial number 5 will not be or the serial number 4 will not receive Aero on it yet, but that they are tweaking Aero again. So the flappy, flippity flappity Elanerons, as we're calling them, those are apparently going to be different by the time we see them compared to, remember, the Mark 1 prototype. We saw the kind of the flaps on it. And then we haven't really seen a vehicle with flaps on it since. And it sounds like by the time they attach to serial number 5, hopefully maybe number 6, then they will be different. As is everything. Yeah.
When are we going to see this thing fly?
This one should static fire, and it's the whole, like, it does, it's so milestone based, you know, like this doesn't happen until this happens, until this happens, until this happens. So first we have to see the this one survive cryoproofing at pressure. So where they cryogenically, you know, fill it to pressure with cryogenic propellant with liquid nitrogen. So we have to see that first, as it survive that, and then they have to install the Raptors, do a static fire of the Raptors. Then we'll see serial number 4 probably do a hop or two with the Raptors in a similar way to Starhopper, but it'll be, you know, 3 engines, so it's definitely a bigger milestone than Starhopper. And then we'll see, then hopefully we'll start seeing the next one, serial number 5 or 6 or whatever, roll out with the flaps and really start properly flying. So my guess,
like going up 20K and belly flopping.
Yeah, my guess, and I'm just becoming more and more realistic about this. Like, I trust me, I think if everything goes right, we could see a 20-kilometer hop in 5 weeks, ish. But if just that's not how things work, and I'm not thinking that we hopefully won't see any more like blowups or collapses, but even if things don't collapse or blow up, sometimes a thing just happens. They're like, well, this one engine's kind of acting up. They have to take the engine off, blah, blah, work on it, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm guessing 3 months based on, like, how long it took to get Starhopper out to the pad and stuff like that. But it's so hard to predict. It's so hard to predict.
Yeah.
So even after they get all the tests and whatnot, and we're belly flopping and things are looking really good on the Starship, they still have to build the Super Heavy.
Correct. But
before
that's,
it's even functional.
That's, I mean, relatively, all quotes, relatively easy, you know, at this point. Look at how quickly, because it's just stacking more rings, basically.
Can you, someone tell Boeing this?
But it's, you know, the same bulkheads and everything. It'll be a different thrust structure at the bottom, but you know, in relative, it's just adding more rings, basically. I don't think that's a big deal compared to just getting the overall construction process down. Because they're focusing on manufacturing. Look at how quickly they're, you know, it was only 2 weeks ago or whatever they blew up serial number 3, you know, maybe 3 weeks ago. And we were like, oh no, but look, serial number 4 is literally right back on. A whole different rocket is going onto the launch pad in 3 weeks. Like, it's insane. So therefore, like, you know, extrapolate that out, keep speeding it up, keep, you know, eventually they could build us a Super Heavy in a month. So, yeah, pretty trivial compared to getting everything figured out. So, I don't know. It's just weird. It's hard to predict.
Well, now that we've talked about it, something is going to happen in the next 24 hours before people actually hear this that will make everything we're saying obsolete.
A hurricane's going to roll through, a micro hurricane called a tornado. It's going to roll through.
Microcane.
Dang
Michael
it.
Caine? What?
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
But yeah, I'm hoping, I'm so ready to see a proper static fire with 3 Raptors. Yeah. That will be awesome. And unfortunately, I don't think I'll be there to see it at this rate. And very few people probably will. But I do need to be there for the 20-kilometer hop, though. I don't care. Like, I'll social distance from, I'll build
car.
A sealed in. Yeah, I seriously, I'll make a biohazard factory in my car or something. Like,
well, you have the spacesuit.
I've got a spacesuit.
Like a legit. Yeah.
Finally.
Got a use for it. Well, speaking of space.
Oh. Yeah.
Have you guys heard about
the
Lunar Crater Radio Telescope?
Ooh, I know the concept.
Yeah, so I guess NASA just gave out, according to this article at Science Alert, their round of grants for their favorite up-and-coming innovative space projects, and one of them is to fit a 1 kilometer wide telescope inside a crater on the far side of the moon.
Yes.
How yes. dope is this?
Yes.
So they're literally going to just suspend wires across a crater on the far side of the moon and make a giant radio telescope out
yes.
of it.
Yes.
And it's called the Lunar Crater Radio Telescope, LCRT.
Yes.
So a couple of different things about it that are groundbreaking about this. One is just the size of it. Where did it say that the FAST telescope here on Earth is the biggest radio telescope right now? And I think this is like 3 times bigger than that.
And it'd be in the wake of Earth noise, you know, like.
Yeah, that was the second part. Yeah.
Sorry. Spoiler.
Duh. No, like right here in this image, oh, yeah. you can see, you know, the sun, the Earth, and all the Earth noise from the radio, you know, stuff that we have going on here would be blocked by the moon. Hmm. So, yeah.
Do they already have a crater in mind?
I'm guessing so. Does it say here? Didn't see if they had the actual name of the crater. I'm sure they already have.
What phase of development is this? Is this like actually? I mean, are we in like just phase one of like studying it to see if it, how tangible it is, or like,
yeah,
or is this like, hey, we're actually in? I forget how the system works there for that type of stuff.
SpaceX is going to have to pay for this for Starlink. That's how it's going to happen.
Well, so this shows how it works. They actually land in the middle of the crater, and then they have these rovers that crawl up the side of the crater and then anchor the ropes and spread out this mesh that gets suspended in the crater.
I love that.
Yeah.
So the FAST,
the 500 meter aperture spherical telescope. So that's 500 meters wide. So this would be twice as wide as that one,
mm-hmm.
with no Earth noise whatsoever.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Why didn't they do that earlier? Amazing. That seems like a great idea.
I've been waiting for some radio telescopes and stuff on the far side of the moon for those exact reasons. It just makes so much sense.
I mean, aren't...
Well, it says right here that they're not clear exactly which crater will be used for the job, so we don't know which crater yet. But they've got plenty to choose from.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't radio astronomy basically the bulk of it at this point? Like, I know we want photos, but if my understanding is radio telescopes are what drive most of the data we collect.
Yeah, basically.
It's especially good for seeing back to the very, very early universe and the edge of the universe, which is the same thing, because... As the universe has expanded, as space-time has expanded, then those electromagnetic waves traveling all that distance get stretched into the radio spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what James Webb's going to be all about,
mm-hmm.
when it finally goes up, hopefully next year.
I think I saw another rendering of that, Joe, right here, if you guys can see this.
That's... See, the Empire was always misunderstood. That was just a telescope, guys.
Yeah. It had some green lasers. For those of you listening, mm-hmm. there's this moon that this group of people made one time, but it wasn't a moon. And it got called the Death Star.
They were trying to take some measurements at the end of the universe, at the distant universe, and Alderaan was in the way. So they had to... Alderaan was the Starlink satellite.
And they wanted Leia just to be there. You know, to see the experiment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's really into astronomy.
She's like, you pointed it the wrong way. Sorry. I didn't know it was going to transit at that time.
So, speaking of.
Luckily, they only redid that over and over again.
Yeah.
That's like their one
movie.
Trick in every single movie is make another Death Star. Well,
that's what I hate. Ugh. Sorry, real quick. Mini rant, really fast. Why is that the end all for every movie? Is like they're going to destroy a planet or a world or a sun or a star. Like, why isn't it some other? Give us some other bad guy.
It's like, just like a virus.
It doesn't have to kill everyone. Why not something that's just trying to kill the main character? Like one person, one bad guy doing one bad thing. Like, why does it have to be like we're going to destroy worlds? I'm not connected to that world. I don't care.
One of the things I really liked about Rogue One was that they explained that the guy who designed the Death Star, forcibly designed the Death Star, purposefully put in this weak spot.
Yeah, because they had
because
to
that
find
was always
an
the one thing.
There.
It's like they've got this Death Star. It's like, well, let's just put this one little porthole where all you have to do is drop a quarter in there and everything blows up.
Yeah, for six movies.
Real quick, though, staying on this rant, was Luke using the Force to curve the photon laser torpedo thing down into the vent?
That always bothered me.
Like, I didn't understand that. How did it... Is that the force? Like, why didn't
Obi-Wan told him to use the force.
Why don't they just use the force to destroy the Death Star? Like, just from sitting at home, like... Like, why do you have to... If you can drive a laser beam down a shaft or whatever, like, just, I don't know.
Just shoot it from, you know, a light year away.
Yeah, just hang
guide
out.
It there.
Do you have your blaster in the living room? Open the window.
Like the Guardians of the Galaxy guy with the arrow.
People are saying.
Maybe he was the second guy on the grassy knoll.
Oh, Tom says it was a ventilation hole. It was sucked in. That's a strong ventilation hole to suck in a laser beam.
What's it sucking in? It's space.
Ventilation. He told you what it's sucking in. It's sucking in ventilation. Speaking of stars.
Yes, please get us off of this.
Polestar, which is a new electric car company from Volvo, just announced
Volvo, right?
Pricing on their Polestar 2, this five-door, all-electric fastback, as they call it. And it starts at $59,900, and it says on the roads, it doesn't say where those roads are, in 2020.
No way.
Yeah. And if you're just watching this after, it's currently 2020. So... 275 miles of range on a single charge, vegan standard interior. This was kind of a big deal when
you
Tesla
eat the interior.
Yeah. You know, I kind of want like a bacon steering wheel. sprint to 62 miles per hour, which is 100 kilometers per hour, in less than 5 seconds. So it's quick, but you know, it's not like 2.3 seconds, 10 and a half second quarter mile time. This is the oddest looking photo I've ever seen of it right here. It looks really ugly.
Yeah. Huh. I'm not a big fan of that particular view.
So here you go. Here's a side shot of it. So if you guys haven't heard of the Polestar, it's not new, but the pricing is new. And the fact that they're moving forward on it, I guess you could say. What kind of building are they driving that into? Look at that thing. I'm excited about this. I think, the design... from this company, and I think they're in Sweden. Just, I really am stoked on this. I do think Polestar is going to be successful and going to be cool. I don't know how popular it'll be in the United States, but depending on incentives and those kind of things. But yeah, we have pricing on it. $59,900 for a car that does those things and such a high quality, interior and everything, I think is a pretty good deal. I think it's not a bad choice.
But how does that stack up compared to the Model Y? Because they're similar. Wouldn't the Model Y be starting off cheaper, lower starting price, faster, bit longer
I think
range?
It goes more to not the major muscle groups here and more the design and the style and those kind of things. To me, it feels more like a Model S, honestly.
Huh.
Yeah.
I always assumed it was more higher end.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Well, Volvo
sure.
stuff is very nice. I always appreciated
it. Yeah. I mean, that's where I would put it. Yeah. I think, per dollar, it's hard to beat Tesla stuff.
At least in the electric world.
Yeah. That's kind of the funny, interesting thing. Like, if you're looking in the low end Tesla stuff, or I'm sorry, the low end electric car stuff, you can get some pretty good deals. But once you get into the high end stuff, you're basically talking Tesla and no one else. Right now.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you want to talk the Porsche Taycan, but that's like stupid. That's $250,000 car. Like, fine.
Right.
But in the, like, if I'm going to be spending $40,000 to $80,000, you're generally looking at Tesla stuff. But I'm stoked. More EVs on the road, more options, more countries, the merrier.
Mm-hmm. And at least it has a good range. 275 is very respectable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, it'll be curious to see, and I really want to do a deep dive and understand how the hell they come up with these estimates and these things, because it's a bit of voodoo, it seems like to me, you know? I mean, you look at it, none of them are even close to right. Like, what's it saying, like a broken clock is right twice a day kind of a thing? Like, you'll get the estimated range once in a while. But generally it's going to be above or below that by some percentage, so who knows.
Right. Crazy. That's cool, though.
Yeah. Polestar 2 coming at you, 2020.
Coming at you, Cleopatra. Anyway, so speaking of Polestar, what are you guys working on?
I'm working on a Polestar.
Yeah. No, what,
I was working on a pole. That sounds bad.
Working on becoming a pole star. You're welcome, internet.
That'll be the next TLC series. America's Next Pole Star. For strippers. Anybody?
Yes.
No? Okay.
No.
Monday, I have a video on Redox flow batteries.
Hmm. Haven't heard of that.
Ringing any bells? Okay.
No. Is this the is this a gravity thing, or it's like an actual battery cell?
It's not a gravity thing. It's it's an actual battery. So, long story short, it's a liquid battery. So instead of having an anode and a cathode, they actually have two different electrolytes: an anolyte and a catholyte.
Huh.
One's positively charged, one's negatively charged, and they go into a fuel cell, and there's an ion exchange membrane. And when you apply current, the positive ions switch over, and it charges the two different electrolytes, and it stores the charge. And then once it's done charging to discharge it, it just basically works in reverse, and you get energy out of it. And what's cool about it, as I go on and on about in the video, is it's basically infinitely expandable. Like, if you want to make a bigger battery, you just get bigger tanks and put more fluid in it. If you want more power, just add more fuel cells. So it's very expandable. So I'm basically making the point with lithium ion that when you get up into these grid scale city powering, you know, facilities, you have to make millions of those 2170 cells in order to make that happen. Whereas with this, you just add more electrolyte to create a bigger tank.
I'm excited to see that.
It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat for big grid scale stuff.
Yeah.
The reason the gravity thing came up, because I was looking at that recently about these gravity trains. Do you guys remember hearing about those?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of a neat thing, but apparently it doesn't look like they ever caught on, and they're just kind of dead at this point. But I thought that was a really fascinating idea, because we talked about water before, which is like pumped hydro, which is, I believe, the cheapest energy storage you can get, but it's not exactly great for the environment, nor is it like just possible everywhere, right? You kind of have to have like mountains.
Like, you couldn't do that here.
Yeah, right. You kind of have to have
it's not an option here.
But the gravity train is something you could do. You could like literally build a roller coaster with a crap ton of like, you know, super, super heavy trains. And when the sun is out, you know, the solar energy hits it and it pushes the train up the track. And then when you want it to come back, you just let the train go down and it pushes the turbine, kind of a thing.
Mm. Right. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the, I would pull it up, but it would take me too long. The idea for a gravity battery where it's like a big tower and there's all these blocks.
Yeah. And it lifts
and
them.
And it's computerized and it just like lifts them up when it's.
Is that what you were talking about too? Powering. Or you said gravity train, Ben, but I was thinking gravity crane when you said that for some reason.
No. I mean, they fall into that same category. I've been really digging into battery stuff lately. And it's, like one guy's company, I forget, it was called Ares or something. The idea was is that with the train, it's a steel wheel on a steel track. Like, there's a reason moving things by rail is so cheap. It's because the like rolling resistance is so incredibly low that the amount of energy, the amount of delta V on Earth you need to move something is incredibly low. So if you have a train, you can push that train up a track, and it much easier than you could like lift something in the sky. But it's the same principle. Basically, you move a heavy object somewhere that gravity wants it to not be, and then when you need it to do its thing, you just let gravity do its thing, and it, you know, creates that energy essentially.
Yeah.
So I found this. It's called the Energy Vault. Let me share that real quick.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about
this. So it like stacks up all these concrete blocks or whatever, and it lowers it down to get the energy out, and then once when it's charging, when it's like getting electricity.
Oh, that whole thing is like made of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's super cool.
Let me find it.
And it's totally automated, and it knows it knows, okay, I have a surplus right now or whatever. Yeah, and so as it lowers them, it's creating power, and when it has excess power, it builds it back up.
This is like a Minecraft simulation we're looking at here.
Minecraft energy.
It's super cool. I love that.
It is neat.
Yeah, I love that idea. And yeah, you could put that anywhere, right? So that's pretty... I wonder why those haven't. I think that the challenge is, from the little bit of research I've done, is you know, batteries, like lithium ion cells, like the Megapack things, the response time of them to grid demand is practically instant. Like, to go faster than that, you have to be like faster than light, and it's just not possible. So yeah, I think that's one of the huge, maybe you talk about that in your video. I don't know what that the flow battery is like, but
I don't, but that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, I'll reshoot it.
Thanks. Too late now. Thanks, Obama.
What about you, Ben?
Okay. So I did the video on the pandemic and the positive outcomes. Please go watch it if you guys didn't, because no one did. So
nobody wanted to hear the positives.
Nobody, you know, and I even had people commenting like, I'm a doctor, blah, blah, blah. This is fine and all, but it's going to be even worse. And I'm like, damn it. I'm trying to make something good here. Right. And you even in that case, like, let's take it to another dark place. So that was the pandemic video. Tomorrow I have a studio tour coming out. So it's kind of cool now that I moved back home. And then next week I have, I don't know what the title is, but something like, Are Tesla Owners Social Distancing? And using data from Tesla, we can see essentially the driving patterns of people. And are people going out, or are they staying home? And what's that like? And then we actually have data from, there's a company called WeHo, I think it's called. W-E-J-O. And it's like a connected cars, like modern higher-end connected cars have this software built in where they track everything you do, even though they didn't tell you that. And surprise, surprise. And they have data that they've reported as well of like other just general populations driving habits. So kind of going back and forth between those, looking at it, looking at supercharger usage during the pandemic and what's happening there. It's a real data-heavy video. Probably no one's going to watch it or care, but maybe you guys will. So you're welcome.
So we'll find out if Tesla owners are socially responsible or just blabbermouths about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I'm in a Tesla, though, bro. I don't have to listen to your rules. Those are for poor people. Come on. That was my Dennis Miller. What do you guys think?
That's right, Ben.
You guys probably know what I'm working on. Still.
Rocket
SLS.
Come to find out, an hour and 17-minute-long video with tons of animations doesn't edit itself.
Did you shoot it?
Well, yeah. It's shot. I've edited most of it. Actually, I'm very close to being done. And I now, I'll say this now, I finally am working with a co-editor to
what?
Do some anime. I know.
How dare you?
For the first time, I'm really excited because I'm like, oh, I could sleep? Yeah.
And seriously, the more you work with an editor, the more they'll start to kind of put their own voice in there, and it's actually really cool. Like,
yeah,
just having another brain on it.
Yeah, I'm excited. Andrew's been other killing creativity. It so far. I sent him what I've animated already, the After Effects files and stuff, and just said, match this. Here's a section. Match what I've done as far as the style and the look. And he's knocking it out of the park, and I'm really, really... It makes me go... Oh, this is how this works.
This is how you make more than one video every quarter.
A year.
Right? And if you're going to be making big, long videos like this, well, that's especially...
Any video. I would love to have it so I don't have to do all of it. Like, this is great. I think if I push After Effects off on someone else, that's probably the
After Effects
easy
can
first
take
step.
A long time.
Oh, my... I spent 2 days on 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be worth it. It's super cool, but, like...
I really
want to
shadow somebody that's like a guru at this. You know what I mean? Just be like, oh, you work for Marvel. You make Marvel movies. You work for one of these VFX houses. I'm just going to sit and just watch what you do. Because guaranteed, like the 800 steps it takes me to do one thing, it's probably like a keyboard shortcut somewhere.
Right. Well, and I think Andrew's already teaching me some of that. He's like, oh, you could just have this in a pre-comp over here. You know, like that type of stuff. I'm like, I know, but that confuses me. I know there's a lot of things I could be doing probably a lot more efficiently, but this should speed up my overall thing if I'm not having to do as much of the work and I can work on other things during that, you know. Who knows, maybe my output will increase to at least once a month.
What? I think you should just go the opposite direction, man. I think you should just do full-on documentaries. Like, get a team, get fundraisers. You know, I hung out with that dude Chris Pine who made the Who Killed the Electric Car, and he said it's about six people on his team when they makes a movie, and it costs like $1.2 to $1.5 million. So that's all you got to do. Just hit up your buddy Mr. Musk and be like, "Yo, I want to do this thing. I need some money." That's like $10.
Maybe
for you.
Maybe if that tour thing goes through, maybe I'll turn that into like a proper documentary. You know, not just like a YouTube video. I don't know.
Seriously. Do it. Yeah. I mean, in fact, Elon, I think, funded Chris Pine's Don't Trust Your Computer documentary. If you guys,
I wouldn't want it to be funded by anything to do with Elon. That'd be, people would be like, wait, shill. He's a page. Elon paid him, you know, like, no way.
Well, you do have to be careful about that when you're doing documentaries, because the first question you ask is who funded this.
And yeah.
What motives that might they have?
Right. It's so hard, right? Like, so often I see a documentary. It's like sometimes, very rarely, but I saw the one on fast fashion, if you guys have heard of that, and I started to watch it, and about 15 minutes in, I was like, what are you? I just got so angry, I turned it off. And yeah, it turns out, like, the people who made it had a very specific message and narrative that they were trying to push, and as I'm going, I'm like, wait, no, so it just wasn't balanced at all. So yeah, it can kind of flop if you don't make it somewhat, you know, wider appeal.
Transparent? Yeah. Although if I was to do something like that, it wouldn't be, I don't think there's like a spin you can put on it. It's just like, here's what's happening. You know, like, here's a factory tour with Elon Musk. Like, I'm not going to be like, this is the only factory that makes rockets in the world. There are no other ones. No one else has ever made a rocket. So here you go. And buy your rockets from SpaceX.com and use
they have a new
code
app
for your rockets astronaut. And rocket supplies.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Sweet. Well, guys, is that it?
We got it through another one.
Yes.
Yay.
All right. Stay safe out there, everybody.
Yeah.
And we'll see you.
You guys take care.
In our
ludicrous
future. Hey, thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do and you want to kind of help get it out there, you can give us a nice review on any of your podcast streaming platforms, whichever one you use. That kind of helps get it out there. Also, we do have a Patreon set up, so you can join us there at patreon.com/ourludicrousfuture. You can get your name in the credits, meet a whole other group of like-minded people. It's a lot of fun. We do appreciate it. We'll see you there.